From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, October 2nd, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The Maine Center for Disease Control is today reporting 37 additional cases of COVID-19. No new deaths. That number stands at 142. The number of active cases in the state is currently 586. Maine's economic output fell sharply in the second quarter of the year. Erwin Gratz has more.
The second quarter runs from April through June, the months of the greatest restrictions on business in Maine due to the coronavirus. The Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis says nationally, the gross domestic product fell at a 31% annual rate. In Maine, it was 34.4%. The decline was more pronounced in some sectors of the economy, accommodations and food service, for example, as hotels' business evaporated and restaurants were forced to close. There was also significant declines in durable goods manufacturing and retail sales. By the end of the quarter, in June, restrictions were easing. That makes it likely economic output will show a gain in the third quarter, which covers July through September. Erwin Gratz, Maine Public Radio News.
Prominent Maine personal injury lawyer Joe Bornstein has died. According to the Portland Press-Herald, he died yesterday, but the cause of death is unknown. Bornstein became a household name over nearly five decades of practicing law in Maine, in part from television ads that featured Robert Vaughn.
When Maine people want a lawyer who shares their values, they call the law offices of Joe Bornstein.
According to Joe Bornstein's website, the firm employs about 40 people across seven offices in Maine. And some nonprofits in Maine are calling for more federal pandemic relief funding, including Paycheck Protection Program loans, to keep many afloat and prevent layoffs. Abdul Karim Saeed, with the New Mainers Public Health Initiative in Lewiston, says more funding is important for his organization to maintain its services during a pandemic which has disproportionately impacted people of color.
So this relief will boost up our service, and we can at least linking the population to the service that's appropriate for them.
Nonprofits are also calling for the federal government to boost tax incentives for charity donations and to expand loan programs to cover larger nonprofits as well. In weather tonight, rain ending with skies clearing in most of the state, some clouds north in mountains and lows in the 40s statewide.
This past week on Maine Calling, Monday, Maine CDC Director Nirav Shah.
There is an ever-closing window of opportunity to get a handle on the COVID-19 situation there.
Tuesday, suicide risk during the pandemic. Wednesday, the month in review. Thursday, the world of podcasting. And Friday, Maine history from World War II through 9/11. Maine Calling online anytime at mainecalling.org.
Maine's tourism industry managed to avert a complete disaster this summer, thanks in part to short-term rentals and outdoor and takeout dining, particularly in resort outposts that drew pandemic-weary visitors from urban areas. But overall, the industry took a massive hit, and as Fred Bever reports, some sectors are looking ahead to a bleak winter, even as they try out new ways to adapt.
Annalise Lafayette manages Portland's Holiday Inn by the Bay, one of a group of hotels her family runs in Maine and New Hampshire.
This property has been one of our properties that was hit by far the worst. Basically, right around March 15th, almost all of our groups canceled within a day. It was by the hour, losing $100,000 and then up to $1 million, and then just kept going.
Lafayette is sitting in the hotel's Port of Call Lounge, which just reopened this week to serve drinks and food to hotel guests. She says that with vacationing visitors in the summer, the hotel has managed to claw partway back to normalcy. But with its big banquet halls and 12 meeting rooms, the hotel's bread and butter is group sales, big groups attending multi-day conferences and other events, such as the annual New England Veterinary Conference or the Geological Society of America.
But yeah, we're, 95% down on the group business side, so it's definitely been a difficult 6 months, and the forecast at this moment doesn't look great either.
Conferences and large business meetings have been a growing sector in Maine, with venues such as the Holiday Inn, the Marriott Sable Oaks in South Portland, or Rockport's Samoset Resort, looking to the late fall and winter as the heart of the conference season. Not this time around.
There's virtually no meetings, zero. And they're, right now, people are canceling into 21 now.
Steve Hewins is executive director of Maine Hospitality, the industry's trade group.
In fact, I'm speaking at the annual Merida conference, the Maine Real Estate Association group, commercial real estate group. They do that every year at the Holiday Inn by the Bay, and they draw 1,000 people. It's like the biggest single event in the state. And they're going to do it virtually in January.
And Quincy Hensel, CEO of the Portland Regional Chamber of Commerce, notes that the winter conference season usually brings in much-needed visitors, not just to the big hotels, but to restaurants, bars, and other entertainment businesses that count on them for support during the colder months.
And it's really hard to see when that can come back. I'm not sure when we'll be in a place where we can gather again and when people feel comfortable traveling. And that's just a hard business to replace.
And Maine Hospitality's Steve Hewins says the apparent collapse of bookings for larger scale conferences in Maine will only add to what is a dismal story of revenue and job losses in the state's hospitality sector as a whole.
We got a report coming out next week from the University of Maine that we commissioned. It's a follow-up to a report they did in June on the state of hospitality. And we're going to show about $2.4 billion in revenue losses this year. It's down. It's going to end up down 30% over 2019.
That doesn't mean, though, that industry leaders are giving up. Some, like the Holiday Inn's Annalise Lafayette, are innovating. She says that with so many businesses sending staff home to work remotely for long stretches of time, maybe even permanently, there could be a new need for periodic in-person get-togethers. Venues such as hers can provide space to spread out in areas served by brand new high-tech ventilation systems and well-produced online audio-visual streams.
We had a company that has been working remotely and they wanted to get their employees back together. And we actually opened a new concept over next door on our parking garage, which has a beautiful view of the bay, and we were able to utilize that space so it was outdoors and socially distanced and everything.
Lafayette says it's possible that many businesses will remain disaggregated even after the pandemic's worst dangers pass. But the benefits of doing business face-to-face will remain, she says, and smart hotels will be there to assist. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
2 years ago, 2nd District Democrat Jared Golden narrowly won his seat in Congress on the second round of ranked choice voting in a four-way contest. This year, he faces just one opponent, Republican Dale Crafts, and according to a recent poll, he's leading him by 22 points. But as Mal Leary reports, Golden says he is taking nothing for granted.
In 2018, Golden used every campaign tool at his disposal to upset two-term Republican incumbent Bruce Poliquin. Poliquin was just shy of a majority of the votes in the first round of balloting, and Golden won in the second round under ranked choice voting. Golden says he misses the personal campaigning this time around, but has bolstered his use of advertising, social media, and virtual campaign events.
So I've traveled around this district, been to hundreds of towns, held over 20 town halls, met with my constituents regularly, and communicated with them openly.
Golden served in the Marines in Iraq and Afghanistan. He is positioned as a moderate Democrat who worked for Republican Senator Susan Collins. After graduating from Bates College, he went on to serve in the legislature as assistant Democratic floor leader under House Speaker Sarah Gideon. He says the election will turn on whether voters in the 2nd District think he's done a good job representing them.
They're going to make a decision on Election Day based upon how they feel about the job that I've done and how I've done it, how I've represented them.
Golden said the most pressing issue for voters is the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic impact of steps taken by governments at all levels to address the crisis. He says he wants his colleagues in Washington to reach an agreement on additional aid to hospitals, individuals, and businesses.
Has Congress done enough? No, obviously not. We are still in the midst of dealing with the coronavirus. It's not gone away. It's not going away anytime soon. And Congress has an ongoing responsibility to meet the needs of our constituents.
Golden has embraced the efforts of the bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus in the House to craft a compromise relief package. He voted against a $2.2 trillion plan advanced by House Democratic leaders, which he dismissed as partisan posturing, and wants a package that can get Republican votes in both houses and also provide needed aid. University of Maine political science professor Mark Brewer says Golden's independent inclinations have helped him build support in the district.
I think Golden has to be the favorite because he's the incumbent, and he is also a good fit. You know, I mean, if we're talk about Dale Crafts being a good fit for the district, I think Jared Golden is also a very good fit for the second CD.
While the second district race was considered close earlier in the year, that's changed according to Colby College government professor Dan Shea, who has Golden at 56% and Crafts at 33% in a recent poll.
But once you begin to cross over the 50% mark at this point in the campaign, that's pretty good.
But both Shea and Brewer point out that this has already been an election year like no other in recent history, and that unforeseen events in the next few weeks could affect the outcome of the race. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.